Chapter 36. I decided to take my own car. Our vehicles are next to each other on the ferry. I look straight ahead, not turning a single degree. I feel for the pouch in the drink holder and toss a palmful of Sema to the river. "Help me with what's coming next," I say. Auntie's timing is the worst. I need this time to put together all the clues, not spend it getting yelled at by my aunt. Plus, Jamie's parting words still linger in my mind. What does he think he knows? She follows me all the way to her house. There's the glow of a fire in the woods behind the pole barn. It's not a full moon tonight, so it can't be a ceremonial fire for that. Perhaps someone passed away and I haven't heard about it yet. When I pull up to the house, Josette's car is there. She must be babysitting the twins if Art is tending a fire. I park next to her car. My aunt walks beside me to the clearing, which overlooks the First Nations Reserve across the river's north channel. Our breaths appear and disappear together. Art stands next to the fire, stoking it with a shovel. There are several large rocks in the pit. We call them grandfathers because they have been here forever, seeing and hearing all. I glance over to the Madutus one. The curved dome of the sweat lodge is covered in old blankets and tarps. The entrance blanket is flipped above the eastern opening. "What's going on, Auntie?" "Intervention sweat," she announces. "Can you even do that? I've never heard of it before." "I'm a modern Nishkwe. I just invented it, hey?" She holds out a floral-gathered cotton skirt for me. Her unwavering hand is like Lily's, demanding Travis's gun. I reach for the skirt. After stepping into the skirt, I pull it over my jeans before taking off everything underneath. I remove my toque, coat, Red Wing sweatshirt, socks, and shoes. Although I'm barefoot and wearing only a t-shirt and skirt, I'm not cold. The fire is strong. It should be. It had an extra 2 hours to strengthen. Auntie holds a small round bundle of Mashka Dewashk. There are different varieties of sage, as well as male and female versions. Mashka Dewashk is for clearing negative energy. She lights one end from a glowing ember that Art holds out on an old shovel. We smudge ourselves with the smoke from the female sage to prepare for the sweat. Auntie crawls into the Madutus one. Art waits for me to enter so he can use the shovel to place one of the glowing grandfather rocks in the center of the lodge before lowering the blankets over the entrance. There is ceremony inside the Madutus Swan. Healing. Returning to balance. Madutus Swan means Mother Earth's womb. You enter your mother and leave reborn. I lower to all fours, like a baby, and follow my aunt's lead. Crawling forward, I pray, not asking for help with one of the seven grandfathers, but acknowledging the grandfather instead. Dabada Ziwin, humility, the knowledge that I am part of something larger than my existence. I give myself up. Afterward, Auntie and I sit at the fire, fully dressed once again. When I couldn't find my toque, she handed me a spare knit cap to pull over my damp hair. We gulp cold spring water before tasting the hominy soup and blueberry galette that Art brought us before retiring for the night. We enjoy our small feast while watching the glowing embers. Salty broth and mushy kernels of hominy nourish something deep inside me. When I bite into the galette, the tang of the wild blueberries mixes with the faint sweetness of the biscuit-like cake, taking me back to my berry feast. I got my first moon when I was 13. Mom alerted my aunt. If I chose to do a berry fast, Auntie explained, I wouldn't be able to eat any berries for one whole year. No fresh strawberries in early summer, no tart raspberries or fat blackberries to fill my mouth. And hardest of all, no blueberries, my absolute favorite. Auntie even took me wild blueberry picking, testing my resolve. In the woods north of Paradise, which felt like a secret from the intense August sun, She wandered off, leaving me with a bucket for collecting the tiny, ripe blueberries. I had to constantly remind myself of what I couldn't have, for fear of forgetting and popping a blueberry into my mouth without thinking. At the end of the day, Auntie eyeballed me as if with X-ray vision. I met her strong gaze with my own. I resisted temptation, knowing I'd never be able to hide any dishonesty from her radar. Sadly, I know now that I can. My year-long berry fast ended with a feast. Auntie, Mom, Grandma Pearl, and my Nishkwe cousins and aunties gathered to honor my passage into womanhood. My mother held a plump strawberry for me. I had to refuse it 3 times, but on the 4th offer, I leaned forward and took it into my mouth. Its sweetness reached the tips of my fingers and toes. When I took a handful of my beloved blueberries, I marveled at each one, appreciating the nuanced range of tart to sweet. It was like experiencing them for the first time. My entry to womanhood was filled with joy, pride, belonging, and seeing ordinary things with new eyes. I am overcome with deep gratitude as I sit here next to Auntie before the fire. Auntie has shown me how to be a strong Nishkwe, full of love, anger, humor, sorrow, and joy. Not as something perfect. She is a woman who is complex and sometimes exhausted, but mostly brave. She loves imperfect people fiercely. Her eyes open. She smiles tiredly at me. This is when I should tell her what's going on. But I know it's not safe to involve Auntie. The stakes for her are different. It's not just her. She is not alone on her journey. We jin de win. Instead, I focus on a plate of food Art placed on the stump at the edge of the woods. Next to the plate is a bundle of female sage, a copper spoon, and my toque. Offerings for the little people, Auntie explains. I quickly shove more galette in my mouth to hide my surprise. Art heard them in the woods while we were in the Madudiswan, Auntie says. They check on us, like Animikig, during thunderstorms, hoping to see us living Anishinaabe Minobi Madziwin. And maybe getting angry if they see us messing with stuff we shouldn't be around? I hold my breath and watch Auntie's face, all shadows and light from the glowing embers of the dying fire. I suppose so. But most who know about bad medicine aren't going to leave it lying around unprotected. In the wrong hands, people can do harm by not knowing what they're messing with. She holds my gaze. Those who know the old teachings, the medicines on the opposite side of healing, they respect its power. We sit in silence for a long time. Uncle David and Auntie used the term bad medicine. So had Lily, the day she went all goon on TJ after he dumped me. My uncle stated clearly in the notebook that there was no connection between the mushrooms and the bad medicine, his code for the meth X. Auntie said bad medicines were the opposite of the healing kind. You need to be careful, Donis, when you're asking about the old ways. She looks at me the way Sini Nimki does sometimes at the Elder Center. There's a saying about bad medicine. Know and understand your brother, but do not seek him. Auntie reaches over to a birch bark basket filled with sema. Taking some in her left hand, she says a quiet prayer. I rise, repeating her actions, releasing the sema into the last embers of the fire. Auntie's voice wraps me like a blanket. Please be careful. Not every elder is a cultural teacher, and not all cultural teachers are elders. It's okay to listen to what people say, and only hold on to the parts that resonate with you. It's okay to leave the rest behind. Trust yourself to know the difference. My aunt hasn't been around lately, because I've engineered it that way, but she seems to acknowledge my forging ahead without her. Something changes between us as we watch the fire simmer into ash, as if I've crossed over from a place where I was a child and am now a grown woman. I trust you to know who to share yourself with, and when not to, she says. I love that you are figuring it out so much sooner than I did. I've made so many foolish choices, messed up so badly, and so often in my life. I gave too much of myself to men who didn't deserve me. As I listen to Auntie, it begins to snow. Big, beautiful flakes, softly floating all around us like tiny feathers. I met Art a long time ago, met him at ceremonies, didn't think of him in any romantic way. Art was too mellow, not my type. She smiles to herself before sighing. I used to be with this one guy. I thought the sun rose just to shine light on him. He was handsome and smart and the life of the party. But oh, when we fought, it was so bad. She shivers and pulls the coat around her more tightly. He consumed all the oxygen in the room and left nothing for me to breathe. If the sun dared to shine on me instead of him, it was my fault. The only way to keep him happy, to see the version of him he was when other people were around, was to make myself small. Her voice cracks. It's hard when someone says they love you, but they need to contain and control the things that make you, you. She pauses to put Seima onto the ashes. So I left him. I came back to the sweat lodge, stayed sober for ceremonies. It felt like Creator breathing air back into me. I ran into Art again, saw him clearly this time. Auntie closes her eyes as the snowflakes land on her cheeks. Oh, I still managed to screw up plenty. I used to start fights with Art to see what he would be like when he was angry. I'd say hurtful things and then turn away quickly. He asked me why I did that. Tears rolled down her cheeks. I told him I was bracing for his punch. That's not love, he told me. Love honors your spirit, not just the other person's, but your own spirit too. When she looks at me, my aunt seems at peace. I found my way back to Minobi Madziwin, our good way of life. I love and am loved. I am true to Creator and to Wajindewin. She points her lips to her home, where her husband and babies sleep. Honor your spirit. Love yourself. I gotta focus on school. You focus on yourself. We gotta stand on our own feet separately. Don't you see? I can't stand on my own if I'm always holding you up. When Lily told Travis that she was done for good, he pulled out a gun. Love is not control. If he had truly loved Lily, he would have wanted her to have a good life, even if it wasn't with him. Instead, he did the opposite of love. Travis steadied the gun in his hand and thought only of himself. As we head back from the fire, Auntie invites me to sleep on the sofa, but I decide to catch the last ferry back to the mainland. As I drive, the snow lets up. At the launch, I park under the light pole. Mine is the only vehicle waiting. I wrap myself in Lily's quilt and page through the notebook. The ferry horn signals its departure from the mainland. It will be here in 5 minutes. I open the notebook to my uncle's entry on the 4th of April from his mushroom search on Duck Island. That page, and the 4 pages that follow, are his notes from when he found the previously undocumented parasitic mushroom and analyzed it for hallucinogenic qualities, as well as his questioning whether there even was a connection between hallucinogenic mushrooms and meth X. I tear the 5 pages so there is no trace of anything regarding the dead end. Anyone reading the notebook will assume Uncle David's efforts were incomplete rather than unsuccessful. The Nish kids in Minnesota didn't have a shared group hallucination. They had a shared encounter with the little people, warning the kids to leave the bad medicine alone. As long as the FBI continues their wild goose chase in search of a hallucinogenic mushroom, they will leave our other medicines alone. I gather any torn page remnants left inside the spiral binding, along with the matches Lily kept in the glove compartment. All the evidence of Uncle David's additional research goes up in flames on a flat rock off the shoulder of the road. It burns quickly, and I am back inside the Jeep when the deckhand motions me to drive forward. The ferry is all mine for the last trip of the night. Stepping from the Jeep midway through the crossing, I release a pinch of Sema over the railing. It carries my prayer of thanks. Miigwech for trusting me with the information about the mushroom, and Chi Miigwech for the responsibility of protecting my community by not sharing the information with the FBI. Because I think I know what Travis did to create Meth X.